Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Vin Forte. How are you, Vin?
Good. We got a very special episode today.
Yes. Today, we've got a complicated episode today. Complicated for me, I'm going to say. Because this is something that I loved. And now it's something that I like. The love is gone, but the like is still there.
Okay.
But you suggested this episode.
Yeah, because ever since the beginning, since we both saw it around the same time when it came out, I have always hated this movie.
All right, good. I'm glad we have that perspective. So we're going to talk today about Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim, the film, came out in 2010. Can't believe it's that long ago already. We're recording in 2021, and I can't believe it's almost 11 years old.
Yeah, I can't believe Michael Cera is almost 11 years old now.
Now, I did something. I've seen the movie a million times. When I first saw the movie, I loved it. I remember I watched it three times in 24 hours when I first saw it. And I still, there's a lot I love about the movie. But I had the manga series, and I think I read the first volume, but I never finished it because I think it was in grad school at the time, and I just didn't have time to read manga. And then when you came up with the idea for this episode, I said, okay, let me go back and read the manga. And I found that I really like the manga. The manga, I think, is better than the movie. So I'm coming to it from this weird place of I love the movie and now I don't. But there's still stuff I like about the movie, but I kind of love the manga.
Yeah, and I think it's made clear that the manga or the comic version is more, it's more clear that they're making fun of guys like Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, there's great tonal differences. Have you read the manga?
I have not read it to completion. Mm-hmm. I remember reading it at the time, though.
Okay.
And my takeaway being that it was very, like, my problem really just stems from the movie. Because if you just watch the movie, I think there's a huge tonal whiplash going on.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. See, my problem with the movie is less about its clumsy tone. I actually think that it's pretty well crafted. My problem with the movie is almost all ideological. I think that it really reduces its female characters to nothing and is really misogynistic.
Well, no, that's my big problem is with the tone and the actual, like, story itself. Like, everything surrounding the story,
okay,
I think it's done really well. Like, it looks great. Like, the movie looks like $1 million. Like,
it really does.
Like, soundtrack is great. Like,
yeah, it is.
Propping up this house of cards is amazing. But the actual story, like the real meat and potatoes of it, I do not like. I do not like the character of Scott Pilgrim in the movie. I think there is no, like, I get what the movie's trying to say. Yeah, I've always said this. I get it. I get that the message of the movie, by and large, is that people like Scott Pilgrim, like, if you're a young guy or a young anyone, you should be allowed to make dumb mistakes and you should be given the freedom to sort of be young and stupid because it's a time in your life and that's you know, that's all you get. Falls apart. But I think that falls apart and very quickly turns into a story I don't care to hear when you realize that Scott Pilgrim's in his 20s,
yeah,
picking up girls in high school,
yeah,
fetishizing the fact that he's dating an Asian girl.
Right.
And, you know, all of that combined, like, all of it combines to make him just an unsavory character.
Yeah.
And then to have him have this moment at the end where he kind of gets the girl, but then, oh, no, she doesn't really want him. And you think, oh, well, this is just a learning experience for him. There's no, it's really not. Like, there's no actual, like, redemption for him as a character. He doesn't learn anything.
And then he does get the girl at the end. And it's kind of like, well, what the fuck did we learn?
But that's what I'm saying. And then the road to get there is paved with these character pastiches.
Right.
Where, like, I do not like the ideas of the evil exes. Because you're not learning anything from them.
Right.
Like, they're aesthetically interesting in the same way that, like, a boss battle in a video game might be.
Right.
But you're not, like, you don't walk away from each section of that movie going like, okay, I see here where he's learning this lesson.
Right.
And it's all going to come together at the end. Like, I think just every step of the way, like there's a, it just becomes more and more a movie that I don't care about the message. Like it doesn't ring. It doesn't resonate.
I'm not sure. You see that message as not working. I think that's even a little bit more charitable. I'm not sure if I even see that much of a message in the film. I think in the manga, there is a message. And I think it all works better in the manga. And the ending of the manga is way better. And I'll, we're going to spoil the manga and the movie here. So if you've not seen or read or played the 8-bit video game of Scott Pilgrim, we're going to spoil all this stuff for you. Let's start, let's just start with some of the basics. So Scott Pilgrim began as a manga. It was published in 6 volumes from 2004 to 2010. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the film, came out 1 week after the last manga came out. So it's literally released a week later, or it premieres a week later at a film festival. It's not released a week later. But the
not to cut you off, but already... It's like, okay, so either they knew the ending way ahead of time, or there's a different ending that's going to be going on here.
Kind of both. The bones of the ending are there. Clearly, clearly the author of the comic, Brian Lee O'Malley, told the director of the film, Edgar Wright, what the ending was, and maybe probably got him to look at some of it, because some of the images in the film of the ending match what's in the comic. But I think the real heart of the ending isn't there. This is a thing that comes up a lot. This has come up actually a lot on this podcast. And it's a sort of a, it's a theory I'm kind of still working out, which is, I think that a film adaptation can be so faithful that it's unfaithful. Yes. You can try so hard to aesthetically match the thing that you're adapting that you lose its soul.
No, exactly. It's like when you, the perfect example is when you watch a movie and you see an actor who's trying so hard to portray someone in a biopic. And then you look at someone who does a great job, but even though they look nothing like them.
That's a perfect example. Yeah. That's a perfect example.
Like, I don't know if you've seen Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson.
Yes, I have. I have.
That's a great example of look, Paul Dano looks like a young Brian Wilson, but. Yeah. When they cut to the older Brian Wilson, played by John Cusack, he looks nothing like him.
No,
but
he's got
his mannerisms. Like, he captures the essence of him, and that's what matters.
No, that's a really great example for it. I think the first time this came up on PCMC, I was talking to Janine about the Watchmen movie, which I think is a great example of this. It looks exactly like the Watchmen comic, yet it is not the Watchmen comic at all.
And the only real scene that resonates, like one of the best scenes in the movie, is the opening, which was not in the book.
Right. Yeah. I guess before we get into the weeds, do you want to give a sort of small synopsis of the story for anyone who isn't aware?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to go back and talk about the story, because it's basically Scott is sort of this loser character.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also like the prototypical, like if you're a boy in his teens, especially around that time, and you're into the same kinds of things that Scott Pilgrim is into, I could see that type of person watching this movie and being like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm Scott Pilgrim. I want to be that guy.
Right. Recently, we did an episode on PCMC on Ready Player 2, and I feel like a lot of the same problems with the Ready Player One series happen here, which is when you have an over reverence for pop culture that is not exactly fair in terms of representation and the way it treats certain people, it's hard to then have your text be that, because you're so enamored by things that are themselves so flawed.
Yeah, and basically, so Scott Pilgrim, he's got his underage Asian girlfriend.
Right, which his friends are so proud of him for it. It's so, like, that's the beginning of, like, yeah, he's in his 20s, he's dating a high schooler, isn't that the coolest? She's Asian, too, whoa.
Yeah, and then, basically, but he's actually in love, and she actually treats him great. Like his actual girlfriend, Knives Chow,
right?
Like treats him like a god. And look, that can be seen as grooming,
right?
Certainly. But let's assume, let's even give the movie the benefit of the doubt and assume that like that's not the case in this instance.
Yeah.
Scott doesn't want her. He wants Ramona Flowers, who's like, again, the prototypical hot, like emo goth girl.
Right. She's like
would be right up Scott's alley.
Right. She's like an elusive pixie dream girl. She's not manic, but she's elusive and she's magical and she shows up in his dreams and she goes around on roller skates and has blue hair.
Yeah. And then Scott has to basically, at some point in the movie, I forget the reason. I don't think it was mentioned like that profoundly, but basically like he has to fight all of her evil exes. Right. In order to win her heart, basically, right.
and it sort of takes the film more than the books takes the kind of form of a video game with bosses,
right? And here's another place where the movie kind of loses me tonally, because it will establish internal logic about the rules of this Scott Pilgrim universe, and then will discard them immediately when the plot deems it convenient. Like there will be points where Scott gets really injured.
Yeah.
But because like in his head, he's thinking about like, oh, I want to fight for Ramona's love and blah, blah, blah. Like he gets a plus one courage and then like,
yeah,
gets a one up and gets to get back in the fight. And it's like, well, why? And then like, why does this character die off? Like what? Like there's no set internal logic. Like I can go with, like, you want to go with wacky, wild cartoon logic? Let's do it. But, like, you got to stick to it.
Yeah. I'm going to keep comparing it to the manga because it's the most recent in my mind. In the manga, all of the same stuff happens. I mean, it's much more of a stretch out. The first act of the movie is basically the first volume of the manga. But then the next five volumes have so much stuff that's not in the movie. The characters in the manga are actual, I mean, the female characters are all pretty thin, but a lot of the characters in the manga get to be actual characters. And the manga feels more like this is a story about young people fooling around and falling in love and whatever. And just as sort of like a funny gimmick, we have some of these references and we have these fights that look like video games. But I feel like Edgar Wright focuses just on the gimmicks, and everything else that the gimmicks were there to serve gets thrown away. Like when you read the manga, it has much more of a jokey tone of like, okay, like now he was just having a serious conversation with his girlfriend, and now he's having a fight with a ninja. Isn't this kind of ridiculous? Whereas I think the movie is like, isn't this the coolest thing ever? And you lose the wink of it, and you lose the fact that I think that all of this wackiness is supposed to be figurative. It's supposed to be a metaphor for what he's going through.
Right.
And in the movie, every fight happens, and what you feel like is this girl, Ramona Flowers, she's not a human. She's a prize. And if he beats these evil exes, he wins the prize, which is very demeaning to her as a character. But in the book, not only do you get to understand her more, but the fights are less of a big deal. And a lot of the fights he runs away from. So the metaphor, I think, is stronger in the book. I think in the book, the metaphor is each fight is Scott dealing with something. He's a guy who doesn't deal with the things he has to deal with. He doesn't want to grow up. He doesn't want to get a place of his own. He doesn't want to like figure out a job. So he runs away from all of his responsibilities. So every time he runs away from a fight, it's like, okay, this is him running away from his responsibilities. But that metaphor doesn't transfer over to the screen.
No. And I think you really nailed it when you say that the first like half of the movie is the first book. And then basically the movie goes, oh, we got how much time left? Oh, we got to fit how many more books in? Okay, well, let's just skip to all the evil exes fights. Like he's going to fight this guy, and then boom, we're going to have an ending.
Right. And really, if you look at the story in the manga, it's sort of a funny drama. It's like almost like a teen thing. It's, you know, this one's dating that one and that one's dating this one. All the, you know, all of the peripheral characters date each other and different people hook up. And it's like that kind of thing. It has more of that sort of feel of like people in their 20s. I also have to say that the manga, it's been colorized now, but it originally was released in black and white. And the movie is super crazy colorful and it's beautiful. But I feel like there's an ennui in the manga and a certain sort of sadness that is not in the movie. The movie's just sort of all whip bang, wow, 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 bells and whistles, where I feel like there is a melancholy to the manga that is then broken up by these silly fights and, you know, wild narrative gimmicks.
Yeah, I think what we're learning is that the book simply just had a lot more going on that the movie just could not be bothered to get to. And I think it does compare to the Watchmen movie in that, like, you know, maybe if you're a fan of the book and you just want to see, like, well, how would they do this scene, like, in real life, in, like, live action, I think you could still get something out of this movie. But if you're looking for an actual, like, like, if you've never read the book and you're like, I want to know what the Scott Pilgrim thing is about.
Yeah.
I want to just watch the movie. I think especially now more than ever in, like, the times we're living in, even though it's only been 10 years.
Yeah.
I think, like you said, like, you were shocked when you, like, went back and watched the movie.
Yeah.
Like, how almost, like, misogynistic it is.
Right. It seems to have aged very poorly, very quickly. And I know the world has changed very quickly over the last 10 years. You know, they use the R word in the movie, which is kind of like nowadays is shocking. But it really has changed. And, you know, I think I've changed too. You know, I was thinking today, like, I loved this movie when it came out. And what's different about me now, and it's, you know, in 11 years, a lot of things. But I think I used to be like Scott Pilgrim. I used to be attracted to younger girls that were completely too young for me because I was immature or because I didn't want to date an adult woman my age who would expect me to have something going on. And because I didn't have anything going on, I thought, oh, let me date a girl too young for me, because then she, you know, then maybe I could trick her into thinking that I'm cool. You know, like, a lot of the pathetic things that Scott does, I think I was that pathetic at one point in my life. And looking back now at Scott, I feel like I have so much more contempt for the character than I once did. I look at Scott and I'm like, God, Scott sucks. In both the manga and the movie, Scott basically sucks.
But again, but that's the thing, like, you're allowed to have main characters that suck. But it's all about what's their service to the story?
Right.
I think in the manga, the service to the story is that, like you said, it's in black and white. Like, there's a whole vibe about it where this is a guy who's running away from his problems and has to actually, like, you know, face them head on and learn to grow up. Whereas in the movie, I don't think that lesson is, I think they maybe, like, hinted that lesson a little bit, but, like, at the end of the story, like, he, again, the message I took away is that he should be allowed to be a screw up.
Right. Like, he fights a version of himself, Nega Scott. And I think that does happen in the manga, but not at the end. And it's not as important. And I think in the movie, it's supposed to be like, he overcame how shitty he was. He admitted that he was shitty and therefore he's grown. So there's no real penance. It's just, he owns up to the fact that he was shitty.
But does he? You bring up an excellent point right there, which is the main crux of what I want to get to about the ending. Because in the sort of narrative, in the bigger picture of the quote-unquote, like, redemption arc in the hero's journey, there should be some moment where you feel like, okay, this character is redeemed. Like, he is now on the right track. He has paid some kind of penance. He's doing the right thing. Where at the end of Scott Pilgrim, he's still, like, remember, Ramon is the one that basically dumps him at the end.
Right.
he still basically won her
right
at the end. So like he still quote unquote like won the prize.
Right. He beats her evil exes and then has to beat a version of himself. And then it's like, you've grown, you've won, but like, what have you done?
Like, you beat yourself in a video game fight,
right?
A bunch of evil exes, which is radically different than the whole first half of the movie,
right,
where we're actually seeing you interact in real life and how you actually are. You know, extra 20 minutes of the movie where you see him, you know, okay, actually change his life. He goes to his bandmates, they're like, hey, let's practice. And he's like,
right.
I don't like, you know, I got to focus on my work right now. I got to do better. Like,
right.
Like something, like, give me something.
It's also interesting because in the movie, you know, Edgar Wright, who also directed Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and Baby Driver, he's very interested in playing with the genre. So in the movie, when Scott fights, it'll turn into like an action movie and you kind of just buy like, okay, even though he's this sort of wimpy, grungy garage band guy, you know, because this movie is doing this crazy video game thing, he just knows how to fight. But in the manga, he fights, but he's not very good at it and he fails a lot. And that feels so much truer to the character. And it seems more like he's earning something when he fights. It feels like the fights are more for him in the comic than in the movie. In the movie, it really just feels like he's got to beat these characters to win her, and she never really explains it that well in the movie. So you're kind of like, well, why does she want this to happen?
Well, again, that's part of the whole Edgar Wright like whiz bang philosophy of how to tell that story that I don't think works in its favor, because things are explained very, very quickly, like very fast cuts, like, oh, we're here, what am I doing now? And they'll cut to Ramona, like, you got to fight my evil exes. I got to fight your evil exes. Yeah, you got to fight my eight evil exes to win my heart. It's like, okay.
Right, right. This was a failure, this film. This film made back a little bit more than half its budget. It really flopped. And it's found some traction, you know, on Blu-ray and stuff like that and streaming. And they consider it kind of a cult movie now. But it was a failure. I mean, maybe this is a stupid question because we're talking about what we think is wrong with it. But I still want to pose to you the question, why do you think the movie itself didn't do well? You know, there are plenty of movies that we don't like that do really well. So I'm wondering, why didn't this movie, I don't see why it wasn't more successful.
Well, you know what? Let me actually look, because I want to see the weekend it came out, because I think that's going to be our first clue.
Right.
So let me go over to you. Okay, Scott, I see an article here by Ben Fritz and John Hoare in the LA Times. Scott Pilgrim versus the Box Office, August 17th, 2010. But as last weekend's box office numbers rolled in, the positive reception hardly mattered at all. The movie sold only $10 million worth of tickets, a disappointing figure given that Universal Pictures spent about $85 million on production and tens of millions more on marketing. Scott Pilgrim followed other movies that failed to convert popularity in the niche comic book market. Imagine that sentence.
I know, right?
Ticket sales. Kick-Ass, directed by Matthew Vaughn from Mark Millar and John Romita's popular series, was greeted enthusiastically at Comic-Con a year ago.
Yeah.
Well below expectations of $48 million at the box office. A year ago, director Zack Snyder's Watchmen, a $150 million adaptation of Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' landmark comic book, grossed $107 million, barely half the take of Snyder's previous film, 300. A producer of Scott Pilgrim, Mark Platt, cautioned that the film's financial story cannot be written after one weekend, but in weeks and months and years. It's covering it up. It's painting over at that point.
Right. It's interesting that these guys are almost saying like, oh, this comic book thing is over, which is wild for 10 years ago.
Well, I think they do hit on some. Okay, I just got to the meat of it. So most moviegoers that weekend embraced the distinctly old school Expendables over the postmodern Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah.
The action film directed by and starring Sylvester Stallone grossed $34.8 million in its premiere weekend, attracting many young men who initially were expected to go to see Scott Pilgrim.
Huh. Interesting.
Pre-release surveys indicated it wouldn't have a big opening, but intense fan enthusiasm may have masked just how minimal the interest really was. Scott Pilgrim was the subject of a jam-packed presentation at Comic-Con and was one of the highest-ranked topics of discussion on Twitter all weekend. Kick-Ass and Watchmen enjoyed similarly positive online buzz, but then didn't turn out to be the commercial hits their backers hoped for.
Interesting.
I think what happened is, and again, this is indicative of other movies at the time, like Kick-Ass, and you know, maybe like Watchmen as well, although I would put Watchmen maybe above both those books. There are the tentpole comic book movies, mm-hmm. your Spider-Mans, your X-Mens, your Batmans, that kind of stuff. And then this was the time where they were like, well, hey, this Scott Pilgrim book seems to be pretty popular with the kids. Like, this is getting, like, it's not a known thing, but it's like a niche. Right. Like, comic book fans love Scott Pilgrim, so let's make a movie about that. Comic book fans, you know, love Kick-Ass.
Mm.
Whereas superhero fans love the big superhero movies.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference between superhero movie and comic book movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think at that time there was a massive overestimation of the appetite for comic book movies.
Mm. I think you make a good point. You know, I also think that for a film that comes out in 2010 and a story that began in 2004, it really feels more like the 90s. Because it's sort of garage, he's in a garage band. It's
feels grungy. Very, it feels very Clerksy.
Yeah, there's an apathy. You know, he's a loser who doesn't have a job, who lives with his friend who pays for his rent. He's kind of a slacker. Remember the term slacker in the 90s? Mm-hmm. We haven't said yet, it's in Canada, which adds a little bit to the ennui of it, of like, you know, it's like, it's not America, it's Canada. Like, there's tons of jokes in the manga and the movie about how, like, you know, this is not America. But the character, the apathetic character of Scott Pilgrim, I feel like, is not, he's not a character of a post 9/11 world. The do nothing, you know, you said it's like Clerks, the do nothing kind of character. The young man who is not just lost, but also doesn't seem to want to get off the couch and fix his life. I don't think that speaks to people. Even in 2010, you know, you've got a recession going on.
Well, here's the thing. I think it doesn't, because I think now more than ever, when we've had, you know, hit after hit after hit, like, okay, you got 9/11, then we're living through a recession, then we're living through, you know, Trump and the rise of, you know, re-rise of white supremacy. I think a lot of younger people are finally going like, okay, like, I gotta do something. Like, I just can't, like, even if it's just me getting active online or educating myself on what's going on in the world. Like, I can't just, you know, sit back and do absolutely nothing. Whereas 10 years ago, I think there was still that feeling, but it was almost like a photocopy. Mm. Like, you had, and we say this about Kevin Smith fans all the time, mm-hmm. that Kevin Smith had his heyday in the early mid 90s because of movies like Clerks and Dogma and Mallrats. But there was a whole generation after that in the next 10, 15 years that grew up watching those movies too.
Right. Right.
And now you have those kids. So now you have the kids that grew up on DVDs who've watched Clerks and Mallrats and have watched those same types of movies. And they see that as sort of like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is what it's cool to be.
Right. Right.
And there's sort of, you know, that sort of model is still in effect. And then I think the thing that kept it around, that kept that sort of model around longer, is the fact that nerd culture, quite frankly, sort of hit a peak at that time.
Right. But I don't know if,
because I feel like I think frivolous nerd culture hit a peak.
Because I feel like it's so big now with Funko Pops and shit. Like, I feel like the intertextuality of nerd culture, and the, you know, kids have, you know, seeing and reading and looking at everything and knowing all this trivia. I actually think if Scott Pilgrim came out today, I think younger people would jump on its problematic issues, But I think like Ready Player One, it would actually find more of an audience now. Because I think people would be like, oh, it's a nerd movie.
Well, again, I think it'd be interesting to see that. I would love to see that tested by some piece of media, because I think that, like, when I think late 2000s nerd culture, I think of, and I don't want to put it in such stark terms, but I think, like, it's all the stuff that I do not like in retrospect, where it's very frivolous, like, oh my God, Comic-Con's coming out. Are you going to Comic-Con this year?
Right.
Whereas now, I think the same people who would go to Comic-Con are a little more discerning. It's, hey, you know, instead of going to Comic-Con, let me go to, you know, PAX East or like some local con in my state that's actually going to, you know, mean something. It's going to be a little more intimate. You're going to see things that maybe you don't see that are just fed to you by, you know, the bigger corporations. And I think people are looking for that.
That's an interesting point. You know, I think in general, to paint it with a broad brush, I think that, you know, nerd culture, whatever that is, you know, people that are very devoted to the consumption of media and cultivating a media literacy. I think there was a change from like the 80s and 90s of like what the Japanese called otaku, which were like people that were like, because they were into all this stuff, they were social misfits, to like around, you know, to just put a pin on it, let's say around like when Iron Man comes out, I think then there becomes this corporatized thing of the machine realizes there's so much money to make off of cultivating these types of fans that now it's not the idea of you're a social misfit. Now it's the idea of like, it's the coolest thing in the world. Come to Hot Topic and get your Nightmare Before Christmas backpack and get your Baby Yoda t-shirt. And you know what I mean? Like, I think that there was a change from the sort of social misfit archetype to like the cool corporatized product. And I feel like maybe Scott Pilgrim is caught in the middle of that, because it's not quite old enough to be, you know, the character is maybe a little bit, he has his foot in the, he's a social misfit, but I think the film is trying to be like, oh, isn't this cool? This is that cool stuff. Look at all the video game references, guys. Look, I'm referencing Mario 2. Isn't that awesome? You know what I mean? And I feel like maybe it's caught in between, you know, in that axis.
I think it's caught in between, because I think people now are a lot more savvy. And you're always going to have people who aren't. You're always going to have the blind fanboys. But I think by and large, people know when they're being sold a bill of goods now more than ever. I think that they would look at something that's being pandered to them. And I think you either have several different reactions now, instead of just being the happy-go-lucky, like, oh my God, I love everything about this.
Yeah.
You know, me, instead, you know, that reaction, even on that extreme level, now becomes, I really like this, but I understand that they're pandering to me. Like, there's no standing there that, like, oh, you want more Baby Yoda? Well, yeah, I want more Baby Yoda. And if they're going to keep giving me quality Baby Yoda things, I'm going to keep buying them. If Disney Plus keeps knocking it out of the park by taking their character seriously on the Marvel side,
yeah,
and giving me, you know, exactly what I want, then I'm going to keep supporting that. Like, there, the hard truth that a lot, I was thinking about this the other day, because someone had brought up Infinity War. I was thinking back to it about how like tight and really well crafted a movie that is, and how like the ending, they really just like, I did not expect them to nail that ending of Infinity War in the way that they did.
Yeah,
like, that was, I thought it was really bold. Obviously, you're gonna have the characters come back, but to have that be the, like, kids, like small children were crying in the theater.
Yeah,
that was a really good move. And then, you know, you look at something like that and you know it's a big corporation behind it. But the mixed truth about it is that there's also people who work their entire lives to get to that point where they can create something that they've finally wanted to see on screen this entire time. Not everyone gets to do that. These people just got lucky. And that's something that we have to take into account, that it's never just like there are no auteurs. Like there's no one person behind the scenes, you know, pulling all the strings. Even with something like Marvel, you could say, oh, well, Kevin Feige's the guy. Yeah, but if the people making the movies Kevin Feige is greenlighting don't make good movies, guess what? He's going to be out of a job pretty soon.
I totally get what you're saying, and I agree with you. I mean, don't get me wrong. By me pointing out the sort of corporatized products that we're given now, I'm not necessarily making a value judgment. Because I love that stuff. If you listen to PCMC, I'm always talking about that stuff, and I love collecting toys. And like you said, there's a certain savviness now where you know that you're being sold something.
That's all I mean. It can't just be. No, I'm just saying it can't just be like how many times have you heard someone, and especially in the case of Scott Pilgrim, love the movie just because like, oh my God, they made when he hit that block, it made a Zelda noise, and I squeed.
Right. Right.
It's like what a comparable moment would be when I remember going into the theater to see Iron Man 2, with a group of people that I worked with at the time. And one of them, there's a scene where he's like, Tony Stark is working on Captain America's shield, and Captain America hadn't come out yet. And the guy sitting next to me, like, puts his knees up on the seat and I'm like, oh my God. Like, that's Captain America's shield. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, it's a nice little easy. He's like, oh my God, it's Captain America. Like, he was like so blown away. And it's like, right. I guess that's a beautiful thing to be like that blown away by something. But it just like, when you get really geeked up by just those moments, it almost like devalues the rest of the movie, the parts of the movie that they actually want you to resonate with.
Okay. Well, you know what? Let's get back into the narrative, because I have some narrative questions. And this is something I also asked about Ready Player One, which is, why does the female character like the male protagonist?
No idea. No fucking clue.
I have no idea.
There's two female leads. And I don't know why either of them like him.
Right. There's nothing there. And you know, you could say, well, it's because he's the protagonist and they're the pretty woman. But it's like, well, that's lame. Like, the movie would end better if she didn't stay with him. Now, in the end of the manga, she does stay with him, but the end of the manga is different. So it actually makes more sense and is better there. But at the end of the movie, it would have been so much better if she said, you know what, I'm out. That would have been a good ending for the film. See, here's the big difference. In the film, you know, the last Evil X, the main big boss, is Gideon. And she breaks up with Scott, and then he finds that she's back with Gideon. And he goes to confront Gideon, and she's there almost like a prisoner. And they make, you know, she's got this thing where it's like, oh, he's controlling my mind. And you see, like, she's got this, like, thing on her neck that's, like, mechanical, like he's implanted something in her. But you know, silliness of that aside, narratively, what they're saying is she left Scott to go back with the ex-boyfriend. So Scott fights Gideon and wins her back. But in the manga, he goes to fight Gideon and he's like, okay, where's Ramona? And he's like, I don't know. I thought she was with you. And she didn't go back to him. When he meets up with Ramona again, she's like, oh, I didn't go back to Gideon. I just went to be alone. I wanted to be alone for a while and just figure things out. And I was like, oh my God, that is so much better. That is way better. Because then it's not about Gideon. Then it's not about the exes. And it also shows that Scott's obsession with this fighting is stupid, because he doesn't really need to fight these people to win her. He needs to understand who she is to win her. And even wins the wrong word. He just needs to really know who she is.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, none of that made clear in the actual movie.
No, because they, you know, the movie has to condense or chooses to condense, you know, a lot of the manga into a feature length. But I think the thing that ends up being cut is the characters. I'm not going to say that the female characters in the book are great. They're not. Some of them are still two-dimensional. People use the word bitch so much in the manga. People are described as bitch. Men call women bitches. Women call each other bitches. It's kind of egregious. but still there are some female characters in the manga that you have some depth. I think Ramona in the manga, she's growing as a person in a real way, not in a I'm a sexy wounded way, come save me, but like in an actual way that a person is grows. And Knives in the comic grows. There's a point in the comic where Scott, even before the end, pathetically is like, hey, do you want to maybe hook up? And she's like, no, I'm kind of over it. And that's much better. That doesn't really happen in the film. You know, the female characters in the film are really just objects. You know, even the scene, not to get all film theory on you, but the scene where he first sees her, like, take her clothes off and they kiss, we see he's got his, like, eyes covered because she says, oh, I'm getting dressed in here. So he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he covers his eyes. And then we see black on the screen, and then he uncovers his eyes and she's right there. So we're literally in his perspective. It's a POV shot. So it's like a perfect male gaze. And, you know, he's looking at her body, and now she's looking at us right in the eye, looking right into the camera. And it's like, this is all Ramona is. She's a pretty girl with colorful hair who's cool, and we know nothing about her. And we don't know why she likes Scott, or why she would, or why she wants to stay with him, or anything about her. Whereas in the manga, he doesn't know anything about her. You know, there's a scene in the manga where he's like, I don't know how old you are. You're so mysterious. And she's like, you just don't ask. Why don't you ask me something about myself?
Yeah.
You know, it proves that Scott is so shitty. Whereas I feel like the movie doesn't totally get that he's shitty.
Yeah. Again, I think the movie is a little too obsessed with like, oh, isn't this cool? Hey, this is a cool person on the soundtrack. Hey, isn't it cool that Scott's in a band?
Right. And you know, to say something positive, I think the movie is a marvel in terms of cinema. I mean, it uses all of the tricks and tools in the cinematic tool belt. I mean, it's got digital effects, it's got practical effects, it's got stunts, it's got lighting effects, it's got simple composition effects, simple editing effects. I mean, it uses everything in cinema history to create this sort of dazzling thing, but there's so much bells and whistles that it doesn't, there's no depth to it. I mean, when I taught film classes in the past, I would show Scott Pilgrim sometimes on the first day because it was a perfect kind of teaching movie. Cause I could then for the rest of the class point to different techniques and be like, remember when they did that? Remember when they did that? It's sort of perfect in that sense. But as a story, as a narrative, it's thin. It's actually very thin.
Yeah, and I think it. I don't know how long it is offhand, but it definitely feels like, you know, for a fairly simple movie, it kind of like overstays its welcome a little bit. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like again, the first half of the movie feels like they're building to something. Like you don't know quite what, but you know, like, okay, if you're not on board of it yet, like there could be something coming that really gets you. And then the whole second half of the movie just becomes the whole shtick with the evil exes. And again, my big thing with that is that outside of the last one and maybe the Brandon Ralph one, you don't really, it feels like we're just rushing through them. Like, why do I care?
There's some of them you rush right through.
Yeah. And it's like, well, why do I care about these evil exes?
Right, exactly. The whole concept of the evil exes is like a background thing in the manga. What's going on in the story is they went to drama stuff. Like they went to a party and he got a little drunk and they had a fight, or you know, his ex-girlfriend is now dating his new friend, and then this one is experimenting with their sexuality. It's more like teen drama, but the movie's only interested in the fighting. You know, and there are whole characters in the manga that just are not in the movie at all, just because the film seems uninterested in character.
Yeah, well, that's, again, like going back to the first half of the movie, we see a lot of characters.
Right.
But they're given, like, seconds of screen time. Like, I forget who Kieran Culkin plays in the movie.
He plays Wallace, who is his roommate.
Right. Yes, he plays the roommate who's paying for him.
Yeah,
I remember him being like kind of an interesting character because I think they play, if I recall in the movie, they like play him off as being like homosexual.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah.
But like, that's not explored at all. Like, that's just sort of like, oh, here's a kind of queer character that we're going to show for a couple seconds so that people can go, oh, look, a queer character. And then like,
right,
right by it.
That character, I think, is better in the manga. And I hate to be repetitive. And also, there's more like, you know, there's a scene in the book where the drummer, Kim, hooks up with the teenage girl, Knives. And there's more queerness in the book in a sort of positive kind of way of, you know, these aren't bad things. People are just young and trying things or finding who they are. His bandmate, Steven, who in the movie is really just there to kind of, he's nothing. He's just there. Throughout the manga, he comes to accept his homosexuality and he ends up with a guy happy. And none of that's in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, I think it's very clear that the main difference is that the movie is way more interested in visuals than story. And the manga, even the fact that the original version had an absence of color,
yeah,
was more interested in telling a story than the visuals.
Well, let me ask you, could you fix this film? Is there a version of this film that you think you would enjoy?
I think they should have taken a big liberty and gotten rid of the evil exes altogether.
Okay.
And had them be like, maybe still have them, but have them be footnotes in Ramona's life that Scott learns about. And like every time she mentions one, he gets curious about what that situation was like. Mm. And then have to reflect on, oh, well, how would I act in that situation? Like something a little more, something that gets Scott to react a little more introspectively.
Okay, that's good. I think my answer would be that it would need to be a series, not a film. You would, and as much as I love Edgar Wright as a director and wish I had seen his Ant-Man, I think he's not the guy for it. I'm not sure who would be good director for it.
But honestly, I think you would go for, again, I don't know offhand, but I think you would more go for someone who has more experience with like teen dramas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. You know, I want to make a recommendation to the audience. If you're interested in more stuff like this, there's actually a really great comic series that's still going on. It's from Boom Comics, which is a great publisher. It's called Giant Days and it's by John Allison, and it is it's very similar. It's got less problematic issues, but it's about young people in their 20s, you know, hooking up and falling in love. And if you're into that kind of comic, I would check out Giant Days. It's really good. I'm looking at Michael Cera's IMDb. He hasn't
done anything in a while.
He's like done little, like he was a voice in Batman, the Lego Batman movie. He's done some voices. He was in something last year called Scott Pilgrim vs. the World Water Crisis. I don't know what the hell that is. Maybe that's some kind of a
Zoom kind of.
Yeah, something like that. He was on an episode of At Home with Amy Sedaris. Oh, he was in 3 episodes of Medical Police. Oh, that was a Adult Swim show. He was in 1 episode of something called Weird City. He was in an episode of Berenstain Bears.
Okay.
He's kind of like, I guess Molly's Game in 2017 was his last like real movie. Oh, I forgot he was in Twin Peaks: The Return. He's great in that, doing like the Marlon Brando impression.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's he was real hot for a while, huh?
Yeah, he's only 32, which I thought he would be one of those people who like looked really young, but is really like 45 or something like that.
He really is young. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, though, her career, I think, is great. She's only gone on to do better things. And Birds of Prey. She's great in Cloverfield Lane. She's great.
Oh, Cloverfield Lane was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. John Goodman, such a good villain in that. So good.
There's nothing more frightening than like when she's wandering through the pipes and then you see in the grates just like John Goodman's face appears.
Yeah. Or that creepy scene when John Goodman comes out and he's just done something horrible and he's just like eating an ice cream cone. He's like, hey, you want some ice cream? Damn, that's a good movie.
And then he was right, which was just the fucked up thing.
I know. I gotta watch that third Cloverfield.
It's a movie.
No good?
You know what? It's an interesting idea. And there are a couple scenes that get me, but it just it landed on Netflix and it feels like a Netflix thing.
I feel ya. I'm trying to is there anything else? Any other points we don't want to make about Scott Pilgrim? So how did you feel in 10 years ago we were friends and I really loved it. How did you feel about me? Did you lose respect for me? Were you worried about me? Were you like, oh, I don't know what's going on with Mike. We should maybe do something. We should talk to him. What was going on?
No, I just didn't get that. Look, you were not the only one that loved this movie.
I think I was a shitty person like Scott. And I also think that I was in grad school and just a depressed, manic pothead. And I think something fun that wasn't my homework was just a thrilling outlet for me. Because I believe I was beginning to work on my thesis, which was just a nightmare. So I think it just hit me in a moment of like I needed something fun and stupid.
Yeah, but it's okay to be into something that's fun and stupid.
Yeah. And you know what? I looked at the movie again today. It's still fun. I mean, there's still stuff in it that impresses me cinematically. It's like, wow, what a good old-fashioned trick. Like, there's a scene where Scott's in the library and he sees Ramona for the first time and he's enamored by her. So he's sort of daydreaming. And a character that's not in that scene, his bandmate Steven, he leans into the frame and says, Scott. And then we cut to inside Steven's house and Scott's like, what's up? And he's like, you're daydreaming. Come on, we're here to practice. And it's simply they got the actor who played Steven to come to the scene in the library and to just literally lean into the camera in that scene. And then they use that to cut the scenes together. And it's so smooth that I think an average viewer might not even notice the little trick there. And it's like, damn, that's such a good, you know, cinema trick. That's like something George Méliès would do. Like, that's just good filmmaking.
Yeah, no, and not to directly compare the two movies, but I would say if you're looking for something big and colorful and not dumb, but like just so you can escape into it for a couple of hours, I would recommend people check out Speed Racer.
You know, I haven't seen that yet, but everyone tells me to watch it. It keeps coming up. I've got to watch it. But see, Speed Racer, from what I understand, and I haven't seen it yet, but from what I understand, it seems like it knows that it's operating on a surface level.
It knows exactly what it wants to do. Here's the trick about Speed Racer. It's not an homage to the Japanese version of Speed Racer. It's an homage to the American dubbed version of Speed Racer.
Okay. And you got John Goodman in that.
You've got John Goodman in that, but what that specifically means is that you get the campiness, you get the very fast-paced dialogue, because in the original one they were trying to match the mouth motions and like fit everything in.
Yeah.
So you get like, Speed, we need to go down to the race right now. But Dad, I cannot because I must go to the race.
Right. This, blah, blah. That's fun.
Like everyone talks like that in the movie, and it's especially fun when you get like the evil characters talking like that in the Speed Racer movie. There's like this smarmy British guy at one point who's trying to get Speed Racer like to join his team. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you will not join my team, Speed Racer. Like, you must do this because I'm the evil guy. And I will blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. And it's just like the guy, I forget who the actor is, but like, it's clear they wanted Tim Curry and couldn't get him. It makes it even better.
All right. So this has been PCMC talking about Scott Pilgrim. PCMC is a pod. You know, actually, before I wrap it up, let me just say, you know, if you like something, fucking like it. Life is a miserable nightmare. And if you get enjoyment out of a comic or a movie or an action figure, go right ahead. I just still want to analyze things, but I'm not here to fucking take anything away from you.
Yeah. Whether you enjoy, you know, comic books, movies,
whatever the fuck
it is. Getting vaccines.
Guys, get vaccinated. That's what we're here to say.
That's what this has all been leading up to.
Yes. This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday. Check us out online at PCMC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Vin's here a lot. Vin also co-hosts WrestleRap, and he also has his own podcast about basketball called Split City. So Vin's all over the place.
Yeah, so check doing those out.
Content, being a content maker, being an influencer. Okay, we end every episode by saying go bye-bye.